Okay, I'm Dakota Carpenter, and this is an interview for History 485, History in the Wild. And to get started, can you tell me today's date and time?
It is November 28th, and it is 12:36 p.m.
Okay, can you let me know your name?
Clay Carpenter.
Okay, thank you. And where do you live?
I live in Cave Creek, Arizona.
And that's where we're doing the interview today, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So can you explain what you do for work and where?
I'm an assistant principal in the Peoria Unified School District at Sunrise Mountain High School.
Okay. And how long have you been there?
I have been there. This is my 15th year at Sunrise Mountain High School.
So would you say you're familiar with everything that goes on day to day?
Yeah, I work day to day with whether it be mainly do attendance and discipline, but I also do staff evaluations, curriculum work, staff development, a little bit of everything.
Okay. So moving a little bit towards the pandemic, have you ever experienced anything like this before?
No, and this is my 37th year in education, and I have never had anything slightly resembling or remotely resembling this pandemic.
It's hard to imagine anybody has, really. So when did you first learn about the pandemic and the coronavirus?
Really, I first started hearing about it in, you know, middle end of January, beginning of February, you know, started hearing about it and talking about it a little bit.
So when you first heard about the pandemic and the coronavirus and everything going on, what did you think?
You know, we started talking about it as administrators at school, and we didn't really know what to expect. We didn't, you know, there were reports it was going to be really bad. There were reports that, you know, it's going to pass quickly. So we just kind of really took a wait and see attitude. We had to, you know, kind of waited for some guidance from our district office, from the state, kind of what we wanted to do with it at that point in time.
So what did you, like, personally think about it? Did you think it was going to have such a huge impact on daily life for not just students but in general? And did you think it was going to last as long as it has so far?
When it first started, I didn't think it was going to impact the students and staff as much as it did. I had no idea really what it consisted of, but my thought was it was going to be something that would maybe run 6-8 weeks and be gone. I had no idea. I didn't know what the extent of it was at that point.
Yeah. How do you think your opinion has changed about the coronavirus since you first heard about it?
Since I first heard about it, I have changed my thoughts as I don't know when it's going to end. Even with a vaccine coming out, I don't know what that's going to do, how many people are going to want to take it, how many aren't going to want to take it. You know, wearing a mask is become a part of everyday life. Any place I go, any place at school, all students and staff have to be wearing them at all times unless they're eating. You know, things that I never thought would ever happen. We have arrows in our hallways directing going in one way, doors locked so they can't enter another way. Social distancing placards put on our floor in the cafeteria so they all stay apart, social distance when they're in line to get food. We've had to set tables up so they were sitting every other seat, and then on the opposite side they were on every other seat just opposite of that, you know, so that no one was directly facing one another or sitting right beside one another. That's inside. Outside we have tables built for 8. We only allow 4 people at each table now. Spread the tables all over the place. It's really impacted how we work at school. We have staff that don't want to use any paper at all because they don't want things the kids have touched. They still, you know, take things turned into them electronically. We have teachers that have basically built a bubble around where their desk is or their teaching area with clear shower curtains, plexiglass, you know, and they made hand sanitizers where they can out of PVC pipe where they can step on it to use it so they don't have to touch it to get hand sanitizer. I mean, things that we've bought for the school, you know, extra power cords so that they can charge their laptops at school when they're working. Hand sanitizer stations to mount on the wall in every single classroom. We have just received now at our school, air purifiers for every classroom. You know, it's just things that we continue.
So those, when's the pandemic's over? Are those things going to stay in place, or are you going to maybe think about moving them into storage and then bringing them back out if you need be? Or is it just kind of one of those things you weren't sure about yet?
Well, the hand sanitizers, those we'll keep, we mounted them to walls. We'll keep those in every classroom, whether they're always filled or not. I don't know. The directional arrows in the hallways. I mean, we just put them down with painter's tape, so they come up real easy. But, I mean, the flow of students has really been good. I mean, granted, we have a third of our school staying online and not on campus, so we only have 1,500 now instead of 2,000, which makes a big difference. Cafeteria, yeah, we'll let them sit together again, you know, that kind of stuff. But a lot of the things that we've done will probably just stay in place because it's becoming commonplace right now.
And it's not, they aren't necessarily big, huge changes that you'd have to adjust to afterwards. It's just like, well, we'll follow these guidelines all the time and hopefully prevent stuff, or we'll have hand sanitizer available all the time and hopefully it keeps sickness down in general.
Yeah, I mean, the initial startup cost was expensive, but we were fortunate enough that, you know, the district got grants that were able to take care of those things. I mean, one of the, a big impact that's been is athletics at the high school. Excuse me. Our football team, for example, I mean, we used to play before a stadium that would probably have on the average 4,000 fans a home game. Well, right now we're allowed for the home team to have each player gets two tickets that they can give to whether it's parents, friends, whoever, and each visitor, they get two tickets for each player. Our band gets two for each parent, and our cheer squad gets two for each parent. So we're looking at maybe 500 people in the stands from going 4,000 down to 500.
You have a fraction of the people in empty stands pretty much every day.
Yeah, it's empty stands, and kids are, you know, they're playing for their friends, a lot of them out there, you know, and those, their friends, the students don't get to see that. We want to try and keep everyone as safe as we possibly can.
I mean, that's the big thing, is keeping everybody safe and still trying to allow these things to happen. And speaking of your football team, you've made the state tournament this year, and with a very good run and a good chance of winning. How do you expect the coronavirus to and the pandemic restrictions to affect that?
Well, you know, the funny thing is we've had our limited number of fans allowed at the game. For example, last night was the first night of playoffs, and we actually had almost 1,000 people there. Let me rephrase it. We had 1,000 tickets available, 600 for our side because that was 25% capacity, and 400 for the visitor side, which was 25% capacity. Our side sold out their 600. I'm not exactly certain what the other side, but it wasn't 400 people, I know that. So it was the largest crowd we've had all year.
But it's still, and, again, a tiny amount compared to even your regular season games.
And it's, and, you know, for example, I don't know if you've ever been to football games at a high school, but the kids cheering, the band playing, and the cheerleaders, that's a big part of what goes on. And with the pandemic, our marching band doesn't get to march on the field. Like the game last night, we didn't even have a pep band there. And the game before, we didn't have a pep band. Just because the pandemic has affected band members so that they can't perform because of the – they may not have it, but they were close to somebody who did. And all of a sudden, you do the social distancing and you do the tracing of everybody. And we didn't have enough to have a band even. So we've gone two games without any band. And it really, really makes an impact of a game without a band.
Not just from the stand and fan perspective, but for the players too.
Oh,
that's
like
a big, hearing the band playing, hearing the fans cheering for you, it's a big motivator. You want to go out and win the game, not just for yourselves and for your team, but for everybody watching and supporting you too.
Because, well, for example, every time the team would do something, whether it's a, you know, an interception or stopping on a third or fourth down or scoring a touchdown or a field goal, the band plays, they get that excitement, they get everybody going. And when you don't have that, it really, really makes a difference.
Especially when you're so used to it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably a big thing is these kids are all used to hearing the band play when they get an interception, hearing the fans scream when they get a touchdown.
As one of the seniors last night at the game came up to me and said, "You know, Mr. Carpenter, I really miss seeing you at school every day. It's, you know, with this pandemic," he said, I miss seeing you because I always stop by your office or you saw me on campus, and I really miss seeing you every day."
Well, and because you had mentioned it kind of before we started recording, your football team is almost entirely online because your coach didn't want them to take the chance of being sick and being out for the game for a game or two or a season, depending on what happens. So they transitioned almost entirely online to try to avoid that.
Yeah, I think there may be four or five of our football players that are on campus for classes. The rest did all go virtual just because of – not that they were afraid they were going to get the coronavirus, but they were afraid someone else that's in one of their classes they may be sitting by or whatever would get it. And then when you do the tracing back, they were too close. That means they're going to be quarantined for 10 days. And, you know, you missed – there's 2 weeks of football you missed. Right now, there's 2 weeks of football left. So if one of them came in contact or that – their season would be done at this point.
Yeah, and it's – I mean, a lot of these players are lucky to even have a season at all with some of the way things were starting off and how late season started in a lot of different places. So for some of these players that are seniors, they would have missed out on their senior season.
And our football team has 28 seniors, so it's – yeah, they would have missed a lot their final season. Yeah, it would have been a lot. You know, there's one of the teams in the 5A playoffs right now that had to forfeit the first game. So they're eliminated because of the pandemic. You know, there's a lot of teams that weren't able to play at all this fall because of that pandemic. You know, we're, knock on wood, fortunate that we're able to do that right now.
Yeah, it's – so these changes are – this pandemic in general and the coronavirus has definitely really affected these students and student-athletes especially because they have their regular school commitments and then after-school commitments with sports and stuff. And you've mentioned kind of some of the changes that were made for sporting events like capacity limits and stuff. What other kinds of changes were made to ensure the safety of not just those students, like the student-athletes, but students in general? You kind of listed some of the, like, things you brought in some other changes. Was there any other?
You know, we have a lot of the classrooms that, I mean, definitely utilizing their space more efficiently, you know, spreading desks out. Because the way we had our schedule set this year is our teachers are teaching virtually and in person at the same time. So their class may have 30 kids on their roster, but the majority of the classes only have between 20 and 25 students in them because the rest are still online. So it allows them to spread the desks out, have them facing one direction, try and, you know, do as much social distancing as possible in the classroom.
So while the class sizes in general aren't smaller, there's less people in them.
Yes.
And that's pretty much across the board for most classes.
Yeah. And, you know, for most of the students that are online or virtual, they are very successful if they want to be. I mean, our teachers, they definitely give the resources, the lessons for them and the things to do. But especially freshmen, sophomores, it's really difficult to have that discipline to sit at a computer to watch a teacher watch a lesson, go through it, ask questions through Microsoft Teams, those kinds of things. It's very difficult for someone at that age to be focused enough to do that unless you are a true student who really wants to work. And, you know, you probably have 80% of your students will do that and will work hard, but that 20%, you know, with the D's or F's right now, if they were in person, that would probably be a 10%.
So it's still like a lot of the ones who maybe aren't necessarily succeeding as well, there's a lot of those probably wouldn't necessarily succeed as well in person, but you'd be quicker for the feedback and to make sure they do listen, to turn it around.
Yeah, exactly. Because when a student's in the classroom with a teacher, they can see if they're participating. They can see if they're engaged in what they're doing, and they can, you know, look at it and they can correct a mistake right away when they see it. But if they're virtual, they, you know, they may log into that lesson and be watching cartoons. They may be playing their video games. They may be doing whatever else and, you know, kind of, you know, half in and half out. And the teacher doesn't know. They can't see that.
The teacher doesn't find out until the assignments for that lesson are due a week later or whatever.
Yeah, because and a lot of times when they have the students on virtually, they ask them not to turn their camera on and not to turn their mic on unless they're talking. And then they turn the camera on also and they're talking, because with so many students online and virtual, the bandwidth is just can't handle all of that. When if you think of we have a school of about 2,100. Well, if you had everybody online, that's taking a lot of computer space and a lot of bandwidth, and most places can't handle that at one time.
And you also don't want the kid to forget he's accidentally on while he, like, changed his clothes or something.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've heard stories and seen that on the news where some will do that kind of thing and it just kind of pops up.
And that's something you definitely want to avoid right now.
Yeah.
So you have all these changes that have been made. So do you think as a school and even as a district maybe, do you think the changes that have been made for students and even for staff and like staff have been successful in stopping the spread and preventing it within your school and within your district?
If I look at our school, I would say yes, and it has helped, because I don't know of anyone on our campus that has actually got coronavirus from someone at school.
If they have it, it was from somebody from off campus.
All the students that we've had, which is, knock on wood again, has been a minimal compared to the other schools in our district, has been from someone outside. When we've had to quarantine students, it's because they were close to that student in class. So, you know, we end up having to quarantine sometimes 20, sometimes 40, sometimes 60 kids, depending on what classes they have, where they're sitting in the class, that kind of thing. But it's always, we haven't, knock on wood, passed that yet. You know, we haven't had it where they've passed it from one student to another on campus. So we've been very fortunate in that aspect right now.
That's good. I mean, everyone's got to try to do their own part, and you can't really control where they go afterwards and who they interact with after school.
So, I mean, that's just it. We can only do so much in the classroom or in the school itself. It's, and we just hope when everyone goes out, they make those wise choices.
And it seems like everything you've done in school, at least, has been pretty effective.
So far, yes.
And so you have an interesting, at least I think, an interesting perspective on this. You're an administrator. You work in a school. You aren't necessarily a teacher, but you see how teachers react. You see how students react, and you see how it's affecting all of them. What do you think your perspective and your position, what kind of view do you think of the pandemic and the coronavirus and the response to it, do you think that you have that others might not?
You know, I look at it as something that I can't really control where it's going or what's going to happen with it. All I can do is, you know, wear my mask, social distance, do what I can do, and try to preach that to others just at school, just to do the same thing. Wear your mask. I mean, I'm going around campus whenever I'm out and about, making sure, get that mask on. It's got to cover your nose, too. I mean, more of the information that's come out has said that, you know, initially they said, yeah, wear a mask because it prevents you from giving it to somebody else. But now they're saying the mask may even prevent you from getting it from somebody else if you have it. So, you know, we have those believers that, man, they're going to have their mask on all the time. And there's those others that you have to keep reminding them. You know, and it's not just students. Staff members are the same way. We have some staff members who will say, it's not going to matter. We shouldn't be worrying about it. And we have on the opposite side of the spectrum where it's like, they don't want to come close to anybody and they're afraid for their lives that they're going to get it. You know, so, you know, we have to try and keep a balance and have the teachers know that we're going to do everything we can to support them as far as safety measures that we can take.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're probably kind of in the same boat as I am, I guess. I obviously don't want to catch it and I don't want to get sick. But my big concern isn't me getting sick. It's me catching it and then spreading it to somebody else who is vulnerable and who could be really affected by it. And I want to do whatever I can to prevent that from happening. And if that's just, if I can do that by wearing a mask and staying inside as much as possible, I'm going to do that.
And as I look at it like a year from now, I'll probably still be wearing a mask. Even who knows how that may be a thing that we do forever in education. You know, I mean, I don't know, because there's a lot that don't want to get a shot. They don't want to get vaccinated. We have a lot that don't want to get vaccinated for things we have now. Here's something new. They don't really know exactly what the side effects may be. So people are going, I don't want to get that.
Especially with so many people now not even really believing in the virus or not believing that it's as serious as it is, really.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think maybe more might believe in it now, because there was so much before the election saying, oh, as soon as the election's done, this virus is going to go away.
And now it's continuing after the election. Maybe it's okay.
It's not, you're not getting any less at all. It's just, you know, it seems to be getting greater. I mean, now they're predicting maybe 360,000 deaths by the middle of December.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
So you mentioned kind of like wearing a mask a year from now. Do you think that and what else do you think might be kind of long-term changes made by, like, public and maybe even government-mandated kind of things because of this?
I think schools are going to probably keep masks well into next school year, just as a safety precaution to make sure we're doing everything we can to keep from spreading it. I think it's going to come to maybe government buildings, probably required to wear them. Businesses, it'll probably be an optional thing. But most businesses, if they're sensible, they're going to say, yeah, we're going to still enforce that. You know, I think it's just something that's going to become a way of life. If you look at some parts of the world, they've been wearing masks for years for pollution.
for pollution, or even just when it's like a kind of personal thing where if you're feeling sick, you throw a mask on.
Yeah. And, you know, so they've been doing it in other places around the world. You know, maybe it's something we need to consider doing here all the time, too. You know, not just looking out for yourself,
but looking out for others.
Looking for others as well.
I think that's a big thing is I think this pandemic might cause a shift in that direction where you don't just worry about yourself being sick all the time. You worry about how you being sick could affect others.
Yeah, it's not just me. It's those around me.
Yeah, at least that's something I hope will more or grow more and become more prevalent anyway.
Definitely.
And so, like, a little veering away from work and everything else. Did you have any plans for this year that you think the pandemic kind of disrupted? Like trips, vacations, anything like that?
I don't really think we really had any major trips or anything planned, but it would have been, you know, nice to get together with everybody for Easter and, you know, just getting family gatherings for Easter, Thanksgiving. I know we're not going to for Christmas again this year, but just, you know, family gatherings for those kinds of things were nice. I mean, just going as a family, going to the fair, going to the, you know, here in Phoenix, the Zoo Lights, those kinds of things that, you know, we just kind of took for granted and would go and we would do, we're not able to. And that's something we never get back. But to remain safe, we can't do those things.
And not, even things like not even quite that big, just going out to eat. Going out to eat now is picking food up on the way home.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we're going to go out to eat tonight. What do you want me to bring in?
Yeah.
Out and in.
And then so I guess kind of one final question is, this is going on almost a year we're getting close to is the pandemic, I'd say, has really been going on. How much longer do you think it's going to go? Whether it's just restrictions like you were saying wearing a mask into the next year or bigger restrictions like businesses being closed.
I really don't see. I mean, I think it'll decrease from pandemic proportions. But as far as the virus, I think it's going to be here forever. How we choose to act and get vaccinated, whether we have to social distance, but I think it's something that's going to be, maybe it'll become seasonal like the flu. Maybe it'll be like the chicken pox where it just hits a certain few. I have no idea. But I think it's going to be here for years to come.
It's really too early to make any concrete decisions or guesses, I guess, because of the way it's gone so far.
And I'm not anything close to a medical professional, so anything I would say about it is just sheer speculation and guessing based on what I hear.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time, and I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Okay, and you do the same, and thank you very much.